Welcome back. Thank you again for tuning in to the CBSSports.com College Basketball Podcast. Season is here, and it was a pretty eventful weekend. On the court, off the court, on the boat, off the boat, plenty of news went about, mostly on Friday night, because that was the day the season opened, but Sunday as well. In fact, recording this podcast on Sunday night, shortly after dinner time, so if there's any huge news that happens, we're either going to break it here on the pod, which will have a delayed effect for those listening, or it's going to happen after we're done, and you can read it on the blog. My guest is pal Luke Wynn, Sports Illustrated, fantastic writer, been on the pod a couple of times before, wanted to get him back on. Sports Illustrated has its College Hoops Preview Edition, out off the presses, so wanted to give some pub to that and recall the weekend, preview stuff, just a whole bunch of stuff. So, Luke, how you doing, man? Coming to us, just a couple blocks from where you saw Maryland-Kentucky Friday night, right?
Blocks, I wouldn't say. The same borough. Borough, yes. Well, it was nice to go to a game in my borough.
I was going to say, it's like like two train stops or?
No, it's like nine train stops. I'm not that close, but it's still, it's nicer. It's closer to me than the Garden, and it's kind of cool that it's become this, new mecca of college hoops to some degree. They have a lot of games there. I mean, it's going to have the Legends Classic a couple of weeks is really good. Even Coaches versus Cancer is solid. So the Barclays is making serious moves in college basketball world.
It is making serious moves. Now, so those who don't understand the whole Brooklyn setup, Barclays is in a fantastic spot for anyone traveling via public transportation. In fact, if you take the subway and you go to the stop, you actually walk up the steps, and it's right there in front of you. There's a massive concourse, outdoor foyer kind of feel to it, but the building's right there.
A rusty horseshoe of whatever.
Yeah, it's very bizarre, right?
Strangely, I mean, I guess I applaud them on doing something weird, but it's a strange route. I mean, I think the expectation as you walk up to a new arena is going to be something shiny, and stuff, but it's like this grid of rusty panels
right.
Laid out. Really strange place. Inside, beautiful. But
well, I think the outside, they intentionally did that for some – there's a reason. Like, there was an actual scientific reason they did it, because someone wrote a story. It might have even been Will Leach for, like, New York Magazine. If it wasn't him, it was someone else. But they – yeah, the outside of the building is all intentionally rusted down to this, bronze-faded gold feel. And it looks relatively hideous. I mean, it looks almost post-apocalyptic from the outdoors. But you said indoors is nice. Can you just give us a feel? I have not been in the arena yet. I went there for A10, so I was in like this little lounge area. We were both there, but I haven't actually been in the bowels, the media center, the court itself. How does it compare to, you've been in dozens of arenas, pretty state of the art, as modern as anything else out there now?
Yeah, I mean, I would say as modern as it gets. I mean, it's what would I say? I thought that the vantage with the viewing angles are really good seats. That even like concession levels are they put a lot of thought into it. They put like local restaurants in there. I think that the staff's pretty friendly. I have no faults with it. The inclusion of local restaurants rather than like generic hot dog and popcorn stands, which is probably in like 90% of arenas, I thought it was cool. So you can actually get the Brooklyn local food movement represented inside the arena.
All sorts of
should we talk about basketball?
We will, dude. This is good. It's a nice conversational flow. Don't worry,
slow,
man.
The slow build.
Just go with it. Yeah,
people. Like I've driven everyone away already. So.
No, you've got a very dulcet tone about you. People engage with that. I promise. You can follow Luke Wynn on Twitter if you're not already. Then you're behind the times at Luke Wynn LukeWinn. And well, let's transition and just quickly hit on that Maryland Kentucky game, because you were there, you wrote on it. Very entertaining game. I admittedly watched more of Nate Walters almost steal a road game with South Dakota State at Alabama than Kentucky Maryland, because I'm obviously going to see Kentucky Maryland plenty of times. But I did watch some of it, and it was entertaining. Your impressions from that, listen, and I'm not going to overreact, and before I really get to the question, I'm going to delay you for a sec here and say it was a little discouraging on Twitter Friday night, and I know Twitter is a bit of an echo chamber and it doesn't represent people as a whole or whatever, but there's still a plenty decent contingent, and if you're in media, you're on Twitter, and there was a lot of NFL/college football-esque overreactions to games on the first night of the season. And I almost was like, people, let's calm down here. But you're not gonna stop that wave, just by mentioning it. I guess, you know, that's just the era we're in. So I was a little surprised at everyone just totally buying into some certain things and not others. So that said, what did
Can we raise the bad arguments that were thrown out? Just because I keep Twitter open sometimes during games, but I don't like tweeting during them, and I also kind of sometimes like to ignore what's being said just so I don't so I can have my own opinion of it. So I may have missed. So what are we holding up to possibly knock down of arguments?
Okay. Well, I had a lot of people, really buying into Alex Len as a top five pick, which, you know, he looked awesome, but can we just wait? I'd have to bring up the scoreboard here. We had the aircraft carrier stuff. I'll get that was a huge thing with the aircraft carrier, but I'm putting that off for like.
Okay. Just stuff in the Kentucky game. We're talking Alex Len getting hyped up.
Alex Len thing and a little bit of, I had one writer direct message me that he thought Noel was garbage. I disagree with that, but
I thought that the early, cause I was hearing, I don't know. I thought Noel was okay. I mean, because there were things that I would hear, you know, there were scouts who went to Kentucky practices early on and, you know, were kind of not writing off Noel, but just kind of saying, maybe you guys in the media should back off of calling him an All-American, you know, right away. Like, I mean, I definitely heard a couple warnings to that effect before the season started, so maybe I was ready for it. But Alex Len, I mean, the thing with the early season is that I have a hard time believing a lot of big man numbers just because the matchups are terrible. You know, when you see some guy get like 20 and 15 against a, you know, it's really small conference team. But Alex Len was going up against two guys who I think will both be lottery picks. And they both don't really know how to play entirely yet. I mean, like Willie Cauley-Stein probably has a better feel for the game than Nerlens does overall. Alex was kind of toying with some less polished players, but to score like he did against that, just that kind of like length and athleticism is pretty impressive. I mean, I definitely didn't believe all of the hype about Len coming into the season, and I was wrong. I mean, I think he scored in a lot of different ways. Like, you saw him step away from the basket. I'm not, you know, I don't want to make the leap and say he's like first team All-American yet, but I do think you're going to have a hard time finding better players in the ACC. I would put him now. I would kind of expect him to maybe be like a first team All-ACC guy. So,
okay,
I was that impressed in terms of that.
Well, no, he looked good. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, let's just like, can we just watch? In a largely, listen, we gotta watch and we gotta write, and people want that. That's fine.
Yeah.
But it's almost like let's just take it a little more slowly. It seems with each.
But I agree with you. I was almost. I mean, as a writer looking for something to happen there, I was thinking, you know, well, you know, probably when I came in, I figured, well, maybe like a Maryland upset would probably turn into the best story at the time, just because, it, you know, there's a lot of angles there. It's like, you know, the defending national champ and the kind of revival of Maryland, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the Gerald Polson thing kind of saved us from having to make those extreme leaps and judgments about someone like Len or even people on Kentucky. Like, I felt like it was a relief for me just to be able to write like a nice story about this totally improbable star moment for a guy who was, I assumed, was just going to be like a bench player again for another year without having to, you know, say definitively that Ryan Harrow is, you know, is bad, or, you know, or the Nerlens isn't playing well yet. Or, I mean, I was happy to be able to write like a nice sort of fairy tale story about Polson versus.
Yeah, and that's what it was. And pretty much, I think I read four stories and all of them centered around that, rightfully. I mean, Jared Polson, who his name is Jared Polson. I got this Fight Club thing going on in my head every time I watch him play. But he comes in. Harrow had the flu, didn't play well, the starting point guard for Kentucky, who played at South Carolina. I actually have doubts about Harrow, specifically when you line him up to Calipari's previous point guards. But so three sidebars to this game I want you to hit on quickly, and then we'll move on to the weekend as a whole. One, people that kind of saw the Polson thing or didn't see and are wondering if the, you know, this white boy, former walk-on, is going to be a big factor in Kentucky's offense. One, do you think he will be? Two, Me and Goodman made a lot about Des Wells going to Maryland. I do like Wells' games a lot. So what did you see with Wells with Maryland kind of first off right there? And then three, since you have last year's Kentucky team still fresh in your mind and our minds collectively, how different is this one to that one based off of, you know, what we saw in New Orleans last April and then what you saw Friday night?
Okay, Polson, number one. I would say maybe early on as a calming influence, you could still be an impact guy, but I mean, Harrow is better than what we saw last night. I don't think he's, I agree with you, he's not a big star, but he's better than, he's much better than that, I think. And
yeah.
I think that as Kentucky gets deeper into the season and Calipari has more trust with someone like Archie Goodwin handling the ball, he'll probably, I would imagine he would default to that versus Polson, you know, later on when, you know, you're playing high level games. I mean, I think Goodwin, but later on in the season could probably be trusted to just run the point in a, you know, it's not going to like create a ton of offense for others, but I would see that happening like down, you know, if you're thinking in the NCAA tournament. So, and our second question is
Des Wells.
Oh, Des Wells. Sorry. Turgeon said something like that he had to be cautious about putting sets in that showcased Des Wells because he wasn't sure he was going to get eligible. So he kind of admitted after the game that, you know, maybe Des was, not that Des was completely on his own, but that Maryland maybe hadn't worked on enough stuff to get him completely involved yet. And I think you saw a lot of very sloppy perimeter play from Maryland. I mean, some just really ill-advised shots that, but there's a lot of potential there. I mean, I think Maryland is a team that potentially could like finish, you know, who knows, like third or fourth in the ACC, make the tournament. And
I agree.
But again, I really think that's it's Len's team. I mean, it needs to run through him. It's not. I know that Des is. I read some things saying Des immediately becomes, or Des is, you know, maybe Maryland's best player or co-best player. But I don't. I think the whole team needs to run through Len. And they were. I mean, Maryland got itself in trouble when it was its guards and its wings were not looking for Len. You know, when they kind of like refocused and did that. That's when they were really good. And it's not like Alex Len's going to be playing against 2 7-footers every night who are athletic. Like he's going to be playing. He's going to be playing against some teams where he can really, you know, really go to work. So that's their best way. And our third question is
Kentucky's comparison to, actually I'm gonna amend it. So how does this team compare to last year? Obviously it's a brand new team. And then aside from that, is this Kentucky team similar in any way to any other Calipari UK team, or is it a whole new breed of squad, so to speak?
Well, I apologize for not being able to remember three questions listed in a row. That's pretty sad.
Your reputation is taking a nosedive right here, buddy.
You know, well, the thing with me is that if Harrow was sick and he's not playing a ton, I don't know if you can tell what they're going to be yet, because it's a lot of those things have been dictated by what can the point guard do. I mean, I think that Calipari plays off of that quite a bit, and if we haven't been able to really see Harrow play well, we can't totally tell. I thought that one thing was pretty interesting was that, like, first possession, they went to Nerlens, like, on a back-to-basket post play, and I wrote that down. I mean, I didn't end up mentioning it in the article because it, you know, ended up being Polson time, but if you remember last year, I mean, Anthony Davis was not featured as a back-to-basket post player very much, if at all. He was kind of a lob collector, I guess that was my term for it. Very good at that. But the fact that they went and did that right away with Nerlens is maybe a sign to me. I mean, they didn't emphasize it a ton later on, but it's a sign to me that maybe they may be getting Nerlens involved in the post in different ways than they did with Davis. And I can't tell what the offense is yet. I mean, I think that the Calipari evolves within a year. I mean, you saw them last year; they started slowing down to, you know, to more accommodate Teague. They were so he's the kind of guy who is figuring it out on the fly. That's the thing. I felt more comfortable writing the Polson article rather than I do think I would say that I thought the Archie Goodwin was their best, is going to be their best player. You know, in terms of like just go to. Of creating offense. You know, Wilcher had a really nice shooting night, and when he's on shooting, he's excellent and is a huge weapon. But I think overall, it's a Goodwin's the kind of guy who can get offense all the time just because he's so good off the dribble, gets to the line, creates points that way. So he, to me, you know, I think that they're not going to have necessarily a clear star offensively. They'll be balanced again, but
he's the guy. Otherwise, from that game, like the only other thing I thought that like atmosphere was amazing for Maryland fans. Really showed up, by the way. They're jacked up about this team. I mean, nice. They were even like showing the Maryland like like the poor sportsmanship Maryland of old. Like I saw a guy in front of who was right near the press section turn to two Kentucky fans, give them or turn to like a crew of Kentucky fans, give them two middle fingers, then make a snorting motion with his nose, and then scream meth in their face.
Okay.
Most inappropriate thing I've seen in a long time at a game, and he just like smiled and turned around, and these fans were just dumbstruck. They were just like, "What just happened?"
Well, a couple things here. One, that's the kind of thing that you need to open up your laptop, bring up TweetDeck, and tweet that out during a game. Okay, and then two, it's not that they've got a coach that can recruit the area well. It's not that they've got a future possible lottery pick on the team. The real signifier that Maryland basketball is back is that their fans are acting extra douchey.
Well, they had the rep. I'm just saying. They had a reputation. I mean, of being it was a really difficult place to play, and their fans were harsh. You know, they weren't just loud; they were harsh. You know, I mean, they did some bad things to do. So yeah, I think it's a sign they're revved up again.
Oh yeah, totally. Okay, let's get to the aircraft carrier games because that and Shabazz Muhammad are the two big headlines, and we're not going to address Shabazz on this podcast because, one, he's still up in the air, UCLA stud freshman, number one recruit in the country, him or Noel, kind of take your pick. But regardless, he's still not able to play. We don't know when. There is some vague information, and we're definitely going to get into that on the Wednesday podcast with Parrish and Goodman, so look for that then. The other thing is the aircraft carrier games. And before I ask you, I just want to kind of spat off for a second here. Now, last year it was awesome. I don't remember one person saying they did not like the aircraft carrier games last year. And if there are people out there, send me the tweets from November 11th of 2011, and I'll give you your props. But by and large, everyone loved this thing. So this time around,
right? I mean, people said it was. I think people thought it was it made for cool images, but it was a pretty bad game.
Well, yeah. It was a sloppy game, but I don't think there were a lot of people that are actually downplaying that altogether. It was almost like, obviously they're playing outside, it's a different kind of thing, but it was really cool. This time around, we had three, and I'd been critical of the fact that there's been three to begin with, but at the same time, you know, it's for the armed forces, so I was cool with it in that regard, but I still thought it was too much of a good thing. But you play two games on the East Coast. They both have to get canceled due to the dew point, which is just, I mean, to have a college basketball game canceled because of dew point is just so hilariously bizarre and embarrassing, you know, whatever. So then Sunday comes along and Syracuse plays their game against San Diego State out on the West Coast against San Diego State out on the Midway, Battle of the Midway. And I got to be honest, I liked it. I think I'm now in the vast minority on this. I thought it was a cool look. Listen, the sun was coming down and it was like affecting him, but it had this like old school outdoor ball aspect to it where it was just like lace them up, no excuses, and first one to 21 wins. I was digging it. So, you know, you don't opine on a lot of kind of stuff like this, but your thoughts on whether, you know, all aircraft carrier games should be canceled going forward, or in my opinion is do one a year, play it on the California coast at the height of the midday sun so you don't have to worry about freaking dew points and the sun setting. Make sure the ship is aligned, almost like baseball fields. They can't be facing the west, so no one's, like, batting.
I would love to see the over. I mean, all I liked about it was, like, I imagine there would be some great overhead pictures of just, you know, 50-foot shadows on, you know, like Rakim Christmas or something like that. I'm looking for that on the wire. But I still think you could do one a year. You're right about – as long as you're controlling the environment. I mean, it was a huge mistake to think that, you know, like the climate on the East Coast could have handled. I mean, it seemed like something you could have anticipated. I mean, I'm not an expert on dew points or outdoor courts, but it just seemed like something that they could have maybe just like put a few planks of wood out, you know, like a year in advance and just seen if it got...
Well, there's a few things. One, I do have a post going up Monday, kind of the photos of college basketball's opening weekend, and one of those photos is just an overhead shot of 24 bodies on the floor, Buzz Williams included, on their hands and knees with towels, and it's just like a total disaster. Like, you just look at the photo and you're like, this should never, ever, ever happen. And I just don't realize, like, do they not have the ability to, and I don't know the science of this, people, but like, have like the same kind of hot air fans that football players get on the bench in the middle of December or a playoff game? Like, can you not put those on the floor, and will that not stop it from happening? I'm sure it wouldn't, but it is. The fact that it's so ill-prepared.
In addition to the windows.
Well, if it's so, no, like, super, today. Super low, like 1 inch to the floor, I don't think it would affect really.
That Syracuse-San Diego Stadium was pretty bad, too. Pretty bad basketball, though. I just think that I wouldn't miss them if they disappeared, just because, I mean, that's a game that, who knows, you know, the turn of the selection committee probably considers down the road for seeding, and it was just like a ridiculous style of play in which no one could shoot. Syracuse probably has the ultimate aircraft carrier defense ever, because I mean,
yeah,
if I were them, I would play like good teams on aircraft carriers every year, just because you cannot, if you can't shoot a three against them and they're playing that zone with like a 6-7 guy up top, even, you can't get it. San Diego State couldn't do anything. So it was,
yeah,
really,
they looked really hampered, and I still like San Diego State a lot. I think that any talk of this, you know, might have impact on selection come down the road. I don't think it will, only because I was fortunate enough to go to the mock selection last year, and so we actually had discussions about Carolina and Michigan State from the Carrier Classic, and it was kind of like, this was the first game of the year, it was on a boat, so it was discussed, but it was almost like, let's put this in perspective. I would expect the same kind of thing to happen this year, if it even gets to that, but who knows.
All right, then that's good to know.
All right, feels better.
Let's
discuss your fine publication here, because I gave everyone else their time on the podcast, you know, between Gassaway and Pomeroy, Dan Hanner, all the rankings and all the stuff coming out here. I wanted to make sure you had your say. So you were alone responsible for the Sports Illustrated preseason All-Americans, and your first team is no real surprise, is Zeller.
Seth was supposed to be in on that, but it just ended up being me. Yeah, so I just kind of had
so you had free reign.
Yeah.
So you have Zeller, McDermott, Cannon, Pressey, and Deshaun Thomas on the first team. You know, no huge surprises there. I'm not huge on Deshaun. I think he's, you know, born to score. If I had to guess, I don't think he'll be first team at the end of the year. So that's the only thing I dispute with you. But there's not really, we can't really go anything with that. So your second team, though, is what I find interesting. You've got Kraft. You've got Thomas and Kraft first and second team, which, you know, I want to ask you if you think Ohio State has a really good chance to be a Final Four team in a second. But before we get to that, you've got Burke, Tony Mitchell at North Texas, who got run by Creighton, which was a huge disappointment on Friday night. And then, but you've got Nate Walters, my boy, on the second team, along with Jeff Withey at Kansas, who I also love. So you go Walters on second team, though, which is pretty fantastic. So let's talk for 45.
What do we get? We got a ridiculous out of Goodman on a tweet in all caps.
No, all caps, beyond ridiculous.
Beyond ridiculous. Well,
so, yeah, let's talk about Nate Walters for 45 minutes. Let's do this.
Let's do this. Nate Walters, I mean, I think that by the end of the year,
who put up 30 on Bama,
he's even going to have to be considered 30. As a first team All-American. Yeah. Because it's not, if Goodman thinks it's ridiculous, then he is letting the jersey affect him too much. Because when Nate Walters plays against, okay, he played against Alabama on Friday night. His team did, but, you know, it's Nate Walters. Alabama's last 2 years has been a top 10 defense nationally. I know that they lost some guys, so maybe they're not top 10 this year, but I feel like Anthony Grant, pretty proven defensive coach, I'd be shocked if they weren't a top 30 defense. You know, again,
yep.
Athletic SEC team. And it's not like Nate Walters was just allowed to just shoot a ridiculous number of shots. He was 10 of 15 from the field, with only two turnovers in 30 minutes, and they almost beat Alabama too. I mean, he's on an NCAA tournament team. He's a highly efficient scorer. He seems to also have fixed his three-point shot, which was the only thing really holding him back last year from scoring at ridiculous numbers. And if his three is fixed, because he had a
down, a very down year. I mean, shot under 30%. If that's fixed, then he really could possibly lead the country in scoring on an NCAA tournament team. And on top of that, this is the other thing, is that I know that there's often like guys from small schools who score a lot that we write off on All-America teams just because they're kind of like, ah, well, you know, it's not – those guys couldn't really hold their own when they – you know, if you put them on a major conference team. But there are NBA scouts who think – not to say that Nate is a first-rounder, but who think that he's fully in the conversation as a second-round pick, and maybe – who you know, if some crazy stuff happened, he could possibly be first. But I think there's a lot of people who do consider him – a guy who at least gets a look in an NBA training camp. So I just don't see the argument for why you couldn't look at what he does and accept it as really high quality basketball, like nationally and not just on a summit league level. Like, to me, it shouldn't even be an argument. But
yes, there is. Yeah, I know. And I think Goodman's alone on that island in terms of that, because Draft Express, who is as tapped in as anyone in terms of Jonathan Gavoni, who runs that site with scouts and everything, he's got him as a second round pick right now. And yeah, to put up 30 season opener on the road at Bama, don't know what Bama is going to be. It was damn impressive. And I know that coaching staff thinks that they should have gotten out of there with a win, because you know what? They did look pretty good. And it was just a case of, you know, a small school team on the road at a major conference opponent, and Alabama's not exactly the best basketball school out there. But, you know, in certain moments like that, you can get a little tight, and I think that did happen with SDSU Friday night. So
yeah, I didn't get to – I mean
– yeah, you obviously didn't see it because you were at Kentucky, Maryland.
I watched an edit of all – but just so people don't think I'm speaking crazily, I did watch an edit of every Walters possession before this, just because I figured – we would talk about him, and I was impressed. Yeah. I mean, the shot looked good. It didn't look. I mean, again, we said 10 of 15. I mean, he forces some stuff just because it's kind of like his role on the team, but not too much. And the turnovers are really low. I mean, it's not. I don't know. I was impressed, and I mean, it was on the road. I guess the atmosphere didn't seem incredibly tough, just because no one, not that people were there, but it was an embarrassing amount of people.
I know.
I guess. It's weird that that Walters isn't a bigger draw on the road. You would think that, like, all these people in Alabama would have heard of him and been, you know, had bought tickets way in advance or even camped out to see him, but it's just not the case, I guess.
I guess not. Yeah. So real quick on Ohio State, because you've got Kraft and Deshaun Thomas.
I actually put Kraft first team, and then I switched it.
Yeah. I think Kraft will be more vital to that team's success than Thomas, so that's basically where I'm coming from.
Well, yeah, I had him first team on my first draft, and then I rearranged a bunch of stuff and I put him on the second. But I think, I mean, his defensive value is incredible. And you saw, I mean, he today scores 20, hits five, I think he hit five threes. I mean, if he scores, not that he's going to score 20 every game, but if you think about getting, you know, if he's let's say a 15-point scorer with the defense that he plays, then yeah, that's an All-America level thing. And I do think the Ohio State is a possible Final Four team. I would say that, you know, we talked a lot about, or I mean, it's funny, like, we all defaulted to Indiana as our number one team just because, you know, what they had coming back. But
is that genuine or is that groupthink?
I think it's group. I think that, well, I think they're the right number one. I don't think that it's wrong, but I think that the groupthink around them being number one maybe creates this like separation between them and other Big Ten teams that to me isn't totally there. Like, I don't think that the gap between Ohio State and Indiana is really that big. It's just like a little bit. And Ohio State, I mean, because Thad has put together really good defensive teams almost every year, and I don't see this one not being good on defense again. And if you get guys like Kraft and Deshaun and even like LaQuinton Ross scoring, they're really good. I didn't pick them in my Final Four, but I maybe regret that.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, You got a sweet deal this year. Now, in the past, we've brought Luke on at the start of the season on the podcast because, you know, start of the season and SI with its preview issue. But you pretty much got out of any sort of, heavy-duty feature stuff. At least I think you did. I'm going off of your tweet that you teased this.
I skipped out. I just did something else.
Yeah, so instead of doing the preview stuff, but it's I'm not saying you skipped out. I'm just saying, like, you finagled. You're like, you know what? I don't need to do this kind of preview stuff. Let me go write about a game that happened 22 years ago. So it's been online for a few weeks now. I think, 3 weeks? And you wrote about this game in 1990 between LSU and Loyola Marymount. And, of course, Loyola Marymount was
between,
known.
Marymount and LSU, yeah.
Yeah. And Marymount was known for their incredible offensive efficiency and just scoring and putting up triple digits. But the piece was more about that, so feel free to gab on your inspiration for this, what you discovered in it, and just how different college basketball is now as opposed to late 80s, early 90s.
Well, I think you talked about it, I think, once last year, of just the trend of you know, scoring and pace being down. And it really is an issue in the sport, I think, that
it is an issue, yes.
If you keep heading down that path, the sport will lose. I don't know how much farther it can go, but if it keeps going that way, the sport's going to lose popularity. I think it's just, if it's, you turn out a product that's just too boring to watch. I mean, if it slides to the point where it's like 60 possessions is average, or, you know, something like that. So it is an issue. And I thought that it was something that needed to be addressed in a way. And I've kind of just, you know, had it on a list of, like, how to address slow basketball. And I didn't know how I was going to do that, but I wanted to do it at some point. And then, you know, kind of serendipitously, like, this reader, who's this guy Ben Steele, who offered me some tapes, you know, like DVDs of games. And so he gave me a list, and I picked – ones I picked, because I picked a bunch of, like, Loyola games because – I wanted to watch them, and yeah. I put in this game, and I was like, and Loyola, and I was just mesmerized. I mean, I like watching basketball. I can watch a ton of it still, of modern basketball, but I put this one in, and I was like, holy, you know, this is just incredible. And I just kind of figured, and that was before we did any of this tempo free stuff. And I didn't want to totally, like, you know, put it all into the stats world, but I did think that charting it out and seeing, like, how it compared, you know, the fact that there were like 100, or I don't, what was it? It was like 100 and, you know.
One, you had Marymount that year putting up 103.6 possessions per game.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is just stupid. I mean, fun, but I mean, that's just it compared to today's, and then you compared it last year, Carolina was the fastest team. And they had 73 possessions a game.
Fastest ranked team, yeah, 73. It's incredible. So, but this game too. So I figured this game was kind of, there were so many storylines around this game that I just kind of wanted to do something that was. I initially thought about maybe doing like an oral history of it, but I wanted to do this to kind of the statistical stuff. So I just figured I could kind of mix like a retrospective of that game and then kind of flash it forward to put it in context to now, to kind of just make this point. And I know that I don't want to hold up, and I say this in stories, like, obviously Loyola Marymount was still even an outlier in its time. I mean, no one.
Yes.
They were 20 points above the next team. But the thing is, like, you had five ranked, you know, of, let's say you had five ranked teams averaging 90 plus points. You know, you had four teams averaging over 80 possessions, and now you only have like one team over 70. So as a whole, it was faster. I mean, like, people were accepting, and it wasn't. I feel like we've turned fast basketball into this really weird, like, circus sideshow now. And I mean, it's like, remember a few years ago when they put Grinnell, the D3 team, on ESPN, and it was like, oh my god, let's all watch this crazy team. And it was fun. I remember watching the game, but it shouldn't be like that, you know. It shouldn't have to be like ESPN putting on a special event from, you know, Grinnell. It should be, there should be like at least one or two teams in the top 25 that just play crazy fast with great athletes. And, you know, I mean, it's nuts that that doesn't exist. It's, yeah, it bothers me to some degree.
I'm going to take, I put out on Twitter for anyone to ask some questions for the podcast, and I want to stay true to that. So one guy asked you specifically, Brian Klemenchik, I don't know if I'm butchering your name, but appreciate the question. And he goes, what can college basketball do to increase scoring of pace and play? And I'll even add on to his question, but you know, what can it do to do that and still, I don't know, not have this fear of sacrificing the ability to win?
I in the magazine version, I expanded on that a little bit. I put in, I think there's another maybe 400 words in the magazine edition that addresses some of that stuff. And it's, there isn't one clear answer. I mean, I know that people want the shot clock to be shorter and maybe drop in down another 5 seconds would make a difference. But like we said, I mean, that game, that Loyola LSU game, was a 45-second shot clock, and
yeah,
they scored 289 points. You know, they don't care. It was just like an awesome moment of team. But Loyola already ignored it, and Dale Brown had, you know, he had athletes like Shaq and Chris, and then Chris Jackson, and just decided to run. And it was just like great seeing athletes unleashed to a degree. And I did think that there's more flow then. I think that you see defenses killing flow of the game quite a bit. The modern defenses are really good at kind of like packing in, cutting off drivers, you know, getting back in transition. And that's, you know, as a credit to them, you know, coaches have adapted, but you probably have to maybe make a even bigger push to ref games in a manner that doesn't reward super physical defense as much. Cause I think college defense is still, allowed, the good college defenses are allowed to do a lot of hanging around. And I think that you may have to sacrifice like a season or a few months of where there are a ton of whistles and it gets a painful, but I think teams and coaches would adapt after you just kind of, you know, rammed in those policies, that would help. A lot of it does come down to coaches, just like finding coaches who are ballsier and willing to do it. I don't know. I mean, that's part of it too. Because ultimately a coach has to implement that kind of system and let it rip. You know, that's one thing that I think Dale Brown said. He just thought that there was too much conservatism among coaches like in the game today. I mean, he was like an ultimate sort of like gunslinger guy. So he's going to say that he would probably view that anyway, but I think he's right a little bit when he said that.
Yeah, the ultimate irony with this is that obviously today's athletes are the most athletic they've ever been, and yet college basketball is decreasing in points per game and points per possession and possessions per game. Well, not points per possession, I correct myself. Actually, the points per possession is going up, so people are being more efficient with their possessions, but the amount of them is going down. We'll wrap up the pod with discussing the tournaments coming ahead, which are sooner than you think, because Thanksgiving is now less than 2 weeks away, and Thanksgiving is certainly when so many of these things happen, either before week of or just after. So where are you going, and what are you looking forward to coming up in the next week or so?
Well, this Legends Classic back at the Barclays Center, I think, is pretty legit. You have Indiana, Georgia, UCLA, Georgetown, I think. Excellent game. Shabazz isn't going to, barring some kind of miracle, Shabazz Muhammad is not
right
be in that game. But UCLA, I thought, I watched some of their game in their first game, and I was impressed enough. I think that's a pretty fairly matched game. You have the storyline. I know Georgetown wanted Kyle Anderson, he's now playing for UCLA. And the final, whether it's Indiana, Georgetown, Indiana, UCLA is excellent. I'm excited to be at that one. Seth Davis will be, I believe he's also announcing for NBC Sports Network in the Bahamas at that Battle for Atlanta. So he's hooked up there. That's that tournament.
Wait, he's announcing for NBC Sports even though he works for CBS? You sure?
Okay, don't get him in trouble.
He's not going to get in trouble. We're the ones that might have the misinformation there. But he did go last year for HDNet. I remember that.
Did. So I was thinking maybe he's just covering it. Maybe I had bad information, but
all I know is he gets an awesome trip and Goodman gets to go as well. So
there, it's unfortunate that that Goodman will be. everyone will enjoy it less. but that, potential semifinals there. You've got Missouri.
The whole field's loaded. Every team that's in that field can go to the tournament and should go to the tournament if they play up to expectation.
Yeah. It's like one of those, and it's surprising that you could get with the amount of early season events that exist now in the sport that you could still pull off a tournament field like that. I mean, because that's a really good field. You're seeing a lot of other tournaments kind of diluted where they get, one or two headliners and it's kind of some filler, but this one's legit. If they can keep booking this tournament like this, it really has the potential to overtake Maui, in terms of like prestige. I would say, Maui still is the kind of the classic one that, has the best name recognition right now. But I mean, Atlanta's,
hey, there's no guarantee though. Great Alaska Shootout used to be the thing, man, and now that thing is irrelevant. Maui has had its run, and maybe it still will. But if it kind of always exists, but slowly but surely erodes, I don't know. I think is going to happen though is I think we're going to have the two premier. I think Maui and Atlantis, at least for the next 5, 6, 7 years, I think they're both going to have really good fields. Everything else, you're going to kind of hope that you get two really good teams and then maybe a third mid-major with a chance, and then that'll be considered successful. But
I'm surprised that, because ESPN has so much power that, and they have Maui, that this tournament with, NBC Sports Network, just, it's nice, but it's not ESPN. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that they were able to have like this much clout in terms of pulling this off. So it's impressive that in that regard, because ESPN really, when it comes down to it, CBS has a tournament, but ESPN still wields an incredible amount of power. They're putting on, Maui's is still its own thing, but ESPN is booking its, its own events. They're more than just like a journalistic organization in basketball. They're putting on a lot of these events. And so yep. Teams are cutting deals with them to play in, a team will cut a deal with ESPN for 3 years or, to play in like, to play in like three different ESPN tournaments. So they're the single biggest like scheduling force in early season college basketball.
And we're better for it too. People can hate on ESPN all they want, but the fact that they have the ability to kind of do all this stuff, it affords the sport a real positive impact, because when you've got all these teams willing to do this, I'd say willing to do this in terms of willing to go and play these games, it gives us good matchups and gives us a better test to see what these teams are, and also helps with seeding down the road,
Yeah, I agree. The sport wouldn't be what it is without ESPN promoting it and putting on the, I guess I would say that there is like a small conflict in terms of being the booker and the mm-hmm. The coverer that I guess will never be fully addressed. But without ESPN, a lot of teams wouldn't get pushed to play in good games early on. If you let teams have like full autonomy and we're building just like a terrible powder puff home schedule, it would happen probably. With some teams it would happen. So it's nice to like push them into these multi-team events where we potentially get great games.
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
Atlanta, we have like what, 4 or 5 great games? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. You can follow Luke Wynn on Twitter. At Luke Wynn, LukeWinn. He's got a fantastic weekly fixture every Thursday called the Power Rankings. And
it might not be Thursday this year, which is crazy. But
Whoa. What are we thinking here then?
It could be, it'll still happen, but it's not nailed down yet. It could be Friday maybe, which I'm still kind of battling that one. We'll see what happens.
I would keep it Thursday, so it's got a little bit of legs. Because on a Friday, it still works. Don't get me wrong. The information is the information. But if it doesn't go up till Friday at 4, then obviously you head into the weekend. But that's just me. You're doing your own thing, and it's fantastic regardless. So.
We'll see. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on.
No problem, man. We'll cross paths soon, and we'll get you back on sometime later this season. Thank you so much, and thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back with a Wednesday edition. Goodman and Parrish will squeeze in it at some point, because both those guys are actually going to be down in Atlanta for the big brouhaha between Duke, Michigan State, Kentucky, and Kansas. So look forward to that, and we'll talk to you soon.